Was there anything that you in particular felt like you learned from these conversations that you might not have known beforehand about that clubhouse dynamic?
You know, I think one of the takeaways from that story, and like you said, there is no real smoking gun. Like I covered the first year I was a beat writer, I covered the 2011 Boston Red Sox, who, you know, lost a nine game lead in September. And like
beer and chicken.
I had, well, I know that was my first time around a team for 162 games. And at the end of the season, you know, ports during the season, I was like, man, I guess Major League Baseball teams just don't kind of like each other. You know, that's just kind of how they operate. And then at the end of the season, John Tomasi at the Boston Herald reports that, you know, the pitchers are drinking beer and ordering fried chicken and they're playing video games during the game. And it's like, yeah, that explains why that's not normal. And so, you know, you start the process of a story like this, wondering like, is there something that absurd going on? And you know, usually not. Is there some underlying tension that we don't see because we're not in the clubhouse as often as we used to be? And you know, the almost, I think probably close to 24 people that Will and I talked to, got very little of that. Like no one really said like, yeah, this team just does not get along. In fact, people went out of their way to say, you know, even granted anonymity, like, no, these guys get along. Like it's a pretty good mix, in the clubhouse. I think one thing I took away was, I think we as fans and even as reporters will look at it and say like, well, whose team is this? You know, which guy, like, you know, is Francisco Lindor the captain? Does Juan Soto being a superstar paid the amount of money he is? Does that threaten Lindor's leadership on any level? And the more people I talked to, the more I got like, it's a 26-man clubhouse. There's not one guy who
right.
gathers the group and, you know, tries to get them going at certain times. You need good leaders across the clubhouse. One person I talked to said, like, you think about the Yankees core four, and it's not just that those guys have been there forever, but you had a starting pitcher, a relief pitcher, a catcher, and a position player. Like, you hit every corner of the roster when those guys are your leaders. And this team, like, it has a group of leaders. It is Lindor. It is Soto. It's Nimmo. It's Alonso. It's Manaea to an extent for the pitching staff, though, you know, he wasn't around for half the season and wasn't performing well, and that affects the way you lead. So I think that the leadership mix wasn't bad, but it also didn't click on the same level as it did last season. And, you know, some people said that 2024, like, yeah, like we weren't going to have as good a clubhouse. Nobody has as good a clubhouse as we did in 2024. Like, that was an exceptionally tight group, exceptionally connected group that had a lot of things you can't create organically go right for it. You know, you're not going to go out and sign like the other version of Jose Iglesias this offseason, the younger version in some way. That just kind of has to happen. And it did for them in 2024. And in 2025, they just kind of had like, you know, a league average clubhouse, basically one that didn't add to their ability to win games, even if it was one that didn't really subtract from it.
Yeah, I, you know, people bring up Iglesias and Martinez so often, and it is clear that there was some sort of drop off just like energy wise from that. I guess my question would be, you know, because when you really think about the 2024 Mets, they didn't really turn their season around until Martinez and Iglesias showed up. And then the moment that they leave in 2025, it kind of goes back to what it was. Do you think it's a bit of an issue if the like full energy of a clubhouse hinges that much on two guys who are either out of baseball or about to be out of baseball?
I think there were probably some things that happened this year that exacerbated that absence. Like, you think, you know, who on the Mets strikes you as an energy guy? You know, a guy like Francisco Alvarez, like a guy who bounces into the clubhouse every day, who likes going through the pregame work, the extra pregame work that a catcher has to go through. Well, he's out the first 3 weeks of the season. Right. He struggles for 2 months. He goes down to the minors for a month. You're missing that guy for almost 4 months of the season, basically. And then he's gone for stretches in August and September as well. So, you know, a guy like that who you count on to be a daily presence in your clubhouse was not there to the same extent. I mentioned Manaea. He's the same kind of guy. You know, it was interesting to me late in the season when he started putting together a couple of good performances, especially that piggyback game with Holmes, that one Friday night, on Tuesday night against the Padres. You had a lot of players were really, really happy for him in a way we don't always see, like major leaguers embrace the success of one of their teammates. And it struck you like how vital he is to that mix, that he's a guy that a lot of players really like and a lot of players really root for. And again, he wasn't there for 3 months, and he wasn't very good for 6 months. So I think that hurt them. Jesse Winker was a guy who had brought edge in the second half of last season. A guy, you know, who when he's on the other team, you hate him. When he's on your team, you like him a little bit more than that. And he wasn't able to do that since he missed basically the last 5 months of the year. Even Jose Siri is a guy who they think could have been an energy guy, but missed five months of the year. So I think the guys who generally take that role, and one person I talked to said it's kind of got to be some of your bench guys, your part-time guys. It's really hard to be an everyday guy and bounce into the clubhouse every day and be the guy who gets everyone going. Like it helped a lot that it was Iglesias last year, who's not going to play every day, but also, hey, is hitting 340. Like that helps too. If Jose Iglesias has the year he did in San Diego this year for them last year, like he doesn't make it 2 weeks on the team.
Right.
So, a lot of that is circumstantial. And it's really difficult to just create, to design beforehand or choreograph. And the Mets were upfront about it last year too. It's not like they said, we built this great chemistry and we knew it would roll off this way. It was kind of like, we kind of lucked into this. And we're not going to be able to recreate it, in this offseason the same way. Now they got to figure out the best way to just kind of create a good mix on the field and off the field in so much as you can, in a winter. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it does have to happen organically of, you know, for every Grimace and OMG song and the pumpkin or whatever it was, you know, you have the flip flop from the dugout that lasted like 2 weeks this year. And everybody's kind of like this one's not working. Or for every Grimace, there's like 20 shticks that usually don't wind up working. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. You know, I think you just have to think about, you know, constructing the roster, right? You want to get good players, you want to get the best players, but you also have to get players that are going to mesh together, because you need that when times get tough. You need that when the pressure is on. And this is an organization now that really, for the first time ever over these last couple of years, has expectations every year. That's something they have not really dealt with too much before the Steve Cohen era. And it seemed, at least from an outside perspective, that they really struggled with that pressure, specifically, you know, the worse things got over the course of the year, it seemed like they were so overly aware of that pressure. And again, this is just perception, but it seemed like they had a hard time digging themselves out of that hole. And you guys had an interesting comment in there where the players anonymously, you know, still supported Carlos Mendoza and still believed in him, but did have some interesting things to say about him. I think some of the quotes, one player had said the communication with him or from him was not as sharp maybe as it was in 2024. And then a few others had mentioned they felt maybe Mendoza was panicking at times with some of the moves that he had been making. What was your POV on that aspect of things?
Yeah, I think, you know, Mendoza has talked about communication. I think that was like the word he said the most in his introductory press conference: communication, connection with players. And he was really good at that in 2024, that there was kind of that, you know, day-to-day communication. Guys knew whether they were going to be in the lineup or not, whether they're going to be used out of the bullpen, like how the pitching staff was going to work. And this year that didn't exist to the same extent. I think, again, like, I don't know that it could have, like that this lineup was not as set beyond number four on a regular basis, because they're kind of looking for the right mix. You know, they had essentially like at that third base, it was just a carousel of who's hot between Beatty, Vientos, and Ronnie Mauricio for stretches. And then in the bullpen, you know, they had kind of a set mix at the start of the year. You know, you go back to those first 2 months of the season, they barely had to make any roster moves for their bullpen. It was really set and really established at that point. And then you go through stretch. I think there was one 3 week stretch where they made 15 roster moves for their bullpen involving like 11 different guys. You know, you add the different guys at the trade deadline, like it was just a lot less settled really for the last 3.5 months of the season. And you can understand why the communication is harder. You know, a guy doesn't know necessarily like this is my role, because it's changing on a day-to-day basis based off of who else is available and what's going on. So I think you have that. And then that line between like playing with the proper urgency or panicking too much, I think different people view it like where it is at a different point. And some people thought, you know, you go back to a story we wrote last year about like why the Mets were able to hold it together One comment we had was that, you know, Mendoza really stood by his players, and he said to them consistently, like, I believe in you guys, you're going to get this. And they did ultimately. And this year there were maybe some players where he didn't quite feel the same way about them. And so he was quicker to make changes, whether that's, you know, again, going back to that third base situation where Vientos lost his job relatively quickly to Beatty. Although, again, like that happened last year and it worked out because Vientos just ran with it. And while Beatty had a nice year, it wasn't quite that. They just kind of were cycling through in a couple different spots at third, at center field. They had some issues at catcher, obviously, with Alvarez. And then, you know, the to-be-determined nature of their rotation at various junctures of the season kind of added to that. So I think, like, again, you can hold two things in your mind at the same time, is that he wasn't quite as sharp on all of those things as he was in 2024. And it was really hard to be as sharp in 2025 as he had been in 24, given the circumstances around him.
Yeah, even the stalwarts of the lineup, those top four guys, were constantly kind of being moved between the top four spots in the order because of their own performance. You know, you had, I think when Lindor went through his 0 for 30 in July, he finally got moved out of the leadoff spot for a little while. Nimmo got moved around. Soto was going between 2 and 3. Alonso was going between 3, 4, and even 5 sometimes. It was a pretty inconsistent kind of season, and weirdly appropriately ended with what I thought was one of Carlos Mendoza's worst managed games he's ever had, on Sunday in Miami, where it just felt like he was either too quick to pull the trigger, too slow, or just picking the wrong pitchers to go to. Again, not entirely his fault that the Mets go into a elimination game and have no idea who's going to pitch. Not an ideal situation, but it did seem like, similarly to the players, like some of that pressure might have built up on him. You could see it wearing on him in the post-game pressers for those last few weeks, where he might have been saying the same things, but the tone and the delivery in which he was starting to kind of just degrade ever so slightly. And I think there were some cracks too. You know, he's not the kind of guy that usually will rip his players to the media. He's genuinely going to keep that stuff in house. But there was a couple moments towards the end where he said he would say something, and I'd be like, oh, that was interesting. That's a little different. I specifically go to the way he spoke about Kodai Senga's bullpen, and just the way he spoke about Senga a couple of times, honestly, where he said it was just okay and his velocity is dead. Like, he very clearly doesn't seem to love whatever's going on with Kodai Senga this year. I don't think Stearns does either. And then the way he talked about Vientos when he made that error in Chicago, and Vientos never saw, you know, at least the defensive side of the field for the rest of the season again. So I thought that was interesting, that just it did seem to wear on him as well towards the end.
Yeah, and understandably so. Like, you know, I think it's difficult as a manager when, you know, you're saying like we're gonna get this right, we're gonna stop making these dumb mistakes, and then it's the final weekend of the season and like your guys are forgetting the count when they're at the plate, and it's like, come on, this is not a manager's responsibility. This is day one of Little League stuff, not Major League Baseball. So I agree with, I think it's a good point, the way that even if his words were the same, even if he was still saying, I believe in the talent in the room, that kind of thing, there was more of an edge to them as the season went on. And I think, you know, the dynamic with Senga is definitely something to watch moving forward, because, you know, he was so good for them in 2023, and that contract looked like a steal at that point. Yeah. And then, he misses so much of last year with the injury, but still, you know, looked decent when he pitched, at least the one start in the middle of the season. And then this year was so good at the start of the year. Like, it's funny, you look at his season ending numbers, they're fine. Like, his ERA plus is like 130. It looked like it's one of those years like, oh man, if he were just healthy, it would have been great. But no, like he never got his mechanics in order the final 3 months of the year. One of the things we put in that story was that some people with the Mets believe they rushed him and Minaya back before the All-Star break, and probably had a negative effect on them moving forward, that if they were just a little bit more patient, then they might have gotten better performance out of those guys for the last 2.5 months rather than trying to get it for three. But with Senga, you know, they clearly have not been on the same page with him when it comes to his injury rehabs and what he's going through. And so trying to figure that out for next year and beyond is really important for them to maximize what they're getting out of a guy who has top of the rotation stuff and potential, but hasn't been able to get there the last 2 years.
Yeah, you mentioned about kind of the silly mistakes that were starting to really compile towards the end of the year, where I think it was Mauricio didn't even realize he walked in one of those games. You had so many misplays in the field or on the bases. I mean, the entire SNY booth was ripping the Mets on Friday night for that inning where they gave up 6 runs. Half of that was on the defense, where Alonso doesn't make a play in the field. And then Gregory Soto doesn't pay attention to the base runner. And then he actually does pay attention to the base runner, but Mauricio's not running towards third base. And I think like 2 or 3 other things happened in that inning. And Ron Darling said something like, you know, if this happened with your travel league team, you'd rip them all off the field. What do you think was going on with that? Like, is that just another part of the pressure? Is there something that was not going on or getting translated with coaching this year? This coaching staff, other than Mendoza, I feel like was under a lot of scrutiny from the fans this year, where, you know, at times the offense is not performing and Eric Chavez is posting weird cryptic Instagram stories for some reason. You have, you know, the pitching struggle, the fundamentals are struggling. And even like comments from Mendoza of like some of the things with the offense, where they're telling the players what to do, but the players aren't necessarily listening to the coaches on some of those hitting plans. Is there just like maybe something has shifted with some of these coaches have been here for a while? We have some new players, some players have been here for that time as well, or the message just might not be getting through to those players? Or is it just kind of this like amalgamation of things?
Yeah, I think that's the reason why, you know, when we talked to David Stearns on Monday, he said Carlos Mendoza is coming back and the coaching staff is under evaluation. And he admitted kind of more intense evaluation than it would be under a normal season. So I think the front office is exploring those questions that you asked to see, like, why did those things that seem like pretty basic knowledge, but basic stuff, not seep into the roster? You know, why were the infielders making those mistakes? Why were the outfielders making their mistakes? Why were base runners making mistakes? All those things combined go into that evaluation.
Thanks for listening to this free preview of the Just Mets podcast. If you liked what you heard and want access to full weekly episodes and additional bonus content, you can become a supporter of Just Mets on patreon.com/justmets or on justmets.net.